Sugatsia for my friends at Casper. Years of research, hundreds of tests, thousands of iterations. The result? The latest and dreamiest in sleep innovation, including the new mattresses from Casper. Casper has done it again with all new mattresses. Waking up with back pain? Introducing Zone Support, Casper's unique ergonomic system designed to keep your spine aligned when you sleep. There's something brand new called Airscape, engineered foam layers with perforations that help regulate your sleep temperature. From bedding, bed frames, and even a dog bed, Casper has everything to build the dream bedroom for every kind of sleeper. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for years. I swear by it. Most comfortable mattress I've ever slept on. Anytime they have new innovations, I am in on that. And as always, free shipping and free returns. And now Casper is offering free contactless delivery. And as always, free returns. Go to Casper.com. Use code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. That's code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms.
This is the Dan Lebatard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
So, Stugatz, I don't know if you've noticed, but the last couple of days, performance artist Pablo Torre, who, crowd surfed at one of our Moss events and said he had awakened a kindergarten performer inside himself who enjoyed the attention and applause of others that he had never been able to unleash. We've been making fun of him as journalists, the journalist crew, because Pablo Torre has arrived where he's arrived as a gas bag with very little in the way of actual writing. Like, he's written 5 articles total and he got to the television screens faster than any of us. And yesterday he breaks the news in his underwear of everything going on with the Knicks. I think it's the only news he's ever broken. And then he tweets this at the start of the chaos at the center of America burning. Riots are bad, and that's why we would all respect a completely peaceful and polite way to famously protest police brutality that involves silently kneeling before America at, like, an NFL game. And Steve Kerr sees that, and his response is, thank you, Pablo Torre, for the perfect text. In 2017, Trump called kneeling NFL players who peacefully protested police brutality sons of bitches. Last night, he called Minneapolis protesters thugs. This is why racists shouldn't be allowed to be president. So you don't hear that very often, okay? You don't hear flatly coming from the mouth of someone in sports, the president's a racist. Greg Popovich is doubling down on all this stuff. Greg Popovich has gone on Steve Kerr's podcast after volunteering to call Dave Zirin of the Nation because he wanted to be heard. Stugatz has been going after Popovich for a while now. We've been trying to get Kerr and Popovich to come on with Stan Van Gundy. Popovich chose Dave Zirin, sports editor of the Nation. It's not exactly a mainstream publication, but it aligns with his sensibilities. And this is what Greg Popovich said. It's so clear what needs to be done. We need a president to come out and say simply that Black Lives Matter. Just say those 3 words. But he won't, and he can't. He can't because it's more important to him to mollify the small group of followers who validate his insanity. But it's more than just Trump. The system has to change. I'll do whatever I can to help because that's what leaders do. But he can't do anything to put us on a positive path because he's not a leader. It's like what Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz used to say when they had the courage to say it. He's unfit. But they have chosen instead to be invisible in the face of this carnage. In the end, what we have is a fool in place of a president, while the person who really runs the country, Senator Mitch McConnell, destroys the United States for generations to come. McConnell has destroyed and degraded our judicial system. He has tried to destroy health care. He's destroyed the environment. He's the master, and Trump's the stooge. And what's funny is that Trump doesn't even know it. Trump's always wanted to be part of the in-group, but McConnell is an in-group of one, and Trump plays the fool. You could read and should read the rest of what he had to say, because he called Dave Zirin with a real statement, like the one Ben and Jerry's put out. He called, it ends with, okay, bye, Dave. That's his last quote. Like, bye. He just came, vented to Dave Zirin, and got off the phone. And the thing I wanted to ask you, Stugatz, because I don't know how much of this you're watching. I've basically, for about 5 years, turned off the television. Like, I don't watch these news programs. I don't like what's become of journalism in this country. And so last night, because I was palpably moved, okay, after yesterday, all right, Roy is broken on air, I'm crying on air, I was palpably moved by seeing that the response to a photo op where the president was surrounded by military to get peaceful protesters out of the way so he could stand in front of a church, my guess he's never noticed before, to go out there and hold a Bible for a photo op. When he disperses those protesters who are peacefully protesting as a sign of his courage, his boldness, he can go out among the rioters. When you see something like that happen on television, and then the response is for Washington to fill up with 50 times as many protesters walking together around and toward the White House, because that's what this country is. The unity of that peaceful protest. I know that everybody is sitting here and taking sides, and there's a lot of fear in the air. But what I watched yesterday, and it's the first time, I swear to you, Stu Gatz, that I've watched these news programs in 5 years. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch Fox. But it is alarming how different the coverage is. That might be obvious. Alarming that you have basically what doesn't feel like objectivity on either side. You got people taking sides, and because of what the way my sensibilities run, well, Anderson Cooper aligns more with how I think, but he's taking a side. He's doing activism. He's talking to the bishop who runs that church, who's offended that the president came over and held up a Bible and used religious symbols for political propaganda. And on Fox, you've just got everyone shouting law and order. Everyone shouting, let Trump put the National Guard in New York because New York's leadership is incompetent and there's rioting. And the thing that I wanted to talk to you about today, because I really do find it interesting, is how do we get from, hey, the country kind of feels united right now, at least a little bit, on stop police brutality. And the result is, nope, we're going to double down on police brutality. You guys want equality? All right, we'll be brutal to all y'all. Like, how do you get the request from a peaceful nation of protesters? And I understand many of you are going to say, well, it's not all peaceful. There are rioters. Yes, there are rioters, but the grand majority are peaceful. Just like the grand majority of police officers aren't that kind of brutal. But what happens when you get the bad stuff in a pocket of otherwise good people? We can agree on that, right, Stu Gatz? We can agree the grand majority of protesters are peaceful, yes?
Yeah, 100%. They are peaceful. They are doing it the right way. Of course, you're going to have people who aren't doing it the right way, but that's natural. I wish we would all do it the right way. But yes, for the most part, they are peaceful protesters.
But think about what we're watching where the call is for equality, and the result is, okay, we'll make it equal. We'll beat all of you up. We'll throw old people down in the street, old white people down the street. We'll shoot women, white women, in the face with rubber bullets. We'll trample the press.
Well, in part, don't you think, Dan, that's why this feels a bit different? Because there is a feeling of togetherness. Listen, I can't sit here and tell you that I understand how it is that Roy grew up or how his kids are going to grow up. I can't relate to it. I can listen. I can try to learn. But I think there is a feeling. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if it continues moving forward and how long it continues moving forward. But I think there is a feeling within the country that for the first time, hey, we share some similarities. We are all in this together. We're all either being lied to or treated unfairly or treated poorly. You lost your job. I lost my job. I can't keep my family together. You can't keep your family together. None of this feels right.
Right. It feels like an absence of freedom. You feel this is what has actually united us. The racial cause will do, but you see what happens, though, right? Just like Kaepernick's protest became about something other than police brutality. It became about the flag, about the anthem, about other things. Now it becomes, instead of about equality and, hey, no police brutality, it becomes law and order, law and order. When, honestly, Stu Gatz, all of us are against lawlessness. All of us are against crime. None of us think it would be a great world to not have police. All we're saying to the police is, hey, you've got guns. We gave you guns. We gave you our trust. Protect us. Protect us from the crime. We trusted you with the guns. Use them correctly. Don't use them on one people. We gave you guns. Protect us. Serve us. Not fight us. Not when we're peacefully protesting. Don't knock us over in the streets. But I got to get, you mentioned Roy. There's something funny yesterday that happened with Roy that we have to get to because the fact that he was about to break down and that I tried to protect him from breaking down and that then I was a blubbering mess is uproariously funny. I can't let anyone around here have their moment. I can't let Billy Gill, when the Marlins allow a first pitch home run, to have his moment. And I can't allow Roy to have his blubbering moment because I tried to protect him from blubbering on air. I start blubbering and now everyone blames me because I shut him up.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W-30. Dominique Foxworth is going to join us there in just a second. Here's your SportsCenter update. Clemson assistant coach Danny Pierman apologized Tuesday after word spread on social media of an incident in which he overheard players using the N-word and repeated it himself during a practice in 2017. Broncos coach Vic Fangio called George Floyd's death a societal issue that we all have to join in to correct, but said he doesn't see discrimination or racism as problems overall in the NFL. Look a little closer, Franks. And finally, NASA is tracking a giant asteroid, which may be taller than the Empire State Building, and it's set to skim Earth's orbit this week. It is expected to rocket by on Saturday, June 6th. Another asteroid. Does anyone care about these things? Like casually just rocket by and skim the Earth? What if it doesn't rocket by and skim the Earth? What if it rockets right into the Earth?
The hurricanes are coming, Stugatz. The hurricanes are on their way. Hurricane season, as if we don't have enough going on around here. The hurricanes are beginning to form over here.
I know. Derek King, Heisman, Dark Horse. Get those futures in now, boys.
You're assuming we survived this asteroid. I mean, yes, it's unbelievable.
I'm assuming we survived, period. You know, everything that's going on before the asteroid.
Okay, last we saw him, second highest QBR behind Kyler Murray.
Oh, God. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
All right, a lot to talk about with Dominique Foxworth. Thanks for joining us. Those two stories that Stugatz just mentioned, let's tackle the first one first. The Clemson situation, where you've got an assistant coach admitting to and apologizing for repeating the N-word. What are your thoughts there on that story, Dominique?
He's a fool, obviously. Like, that seemed like an obvious thing that you should know not to do. However, I think the most important thing that I've taken out of this is I don't care what they do with him. I don't know him well enough to know that this is whether this was an aberration or this is a reflection of his true character. And honestly, I don't care. Like, this is one of those opportunities for the misdirection. This is one of those racism sleight of hand tricks where everyone who is allowing more pernicious things to take place in our society, who are perpetuating it or turning a blind eye to it, they feel good about themselves because they can point at him and say, he said the N-word, we found the racist, everyone, we're safe now. And while we're all looking at him and yelling about how he's racist or how he should or shouldn't lose his job, all the things that are more problematic and all the people that are more problematic, the people who are smart enough not to say the N-word but crafty enough to still subjugate black people, those people are slipping away. So I don't want to fall victim to that that sleight of hand, that ninja smoke bomb, racism ninja smoke bomb, where the real dangerous things slip away when we're over here policing some guy about some pretty irrelevant coach about the word that he used a few years ago.
How do you feel as a former Bronco about Vic Fangio saying, quote, I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think we run the risk of having the same thing happen. Obviously, he needs to educate himself, and it's not our responsibility as black people to educate him. It's his responsibility to go seek that education. I don't know how you could be so close to something. I guess the theory of being too close to see something could be an accurate one here, because it seemed that he could obviously see what was happening in Minneapolis, and he had strong comments about what he saw there, which I think is obvious. It's hard not to have strong comments about that. But I was on one of the Ravens teams that he was the linebackers coach on, so I didn't spend much time with him. But, like, locker rooms have divisions, and there are things that exist in coaching, obviously. Like, we wouldn't have been debating a new addition to the Rooney Rule if we thought that racism was solved in football. And I was on Get Up talking about this morning. Jalen made an interesting point just about his age, and I think the point Jalen was trying to make is that he is from a different time, so this world looks probably different than the one that he grew up in. But we all often fall victim of thinking that people who've had success in one field are very smart. Vic Fangio is an awesome defensive coach, and this team is a team I picked to make the playoffs this year. So I think he's going to do a good job coaching the team. But that doesn't mean he's self-aware. That doesn't mean he's educated on these other issues. So I'm not surprised that he said it. I think other coaches probably feel that way. And the last point I'll make about him is I think that it's probably colored, his opinion is colored by his journey. Like, he started his career as a high school football coach a long time ago, and then went on to the USFL, did some college stuff, entered the NFL in 1986, and has been a well-respected coach, and didn't get his first head coaching opportunity until last year. And he took a job from Vance Joseph that Vance Joseph held before, who had less credentials than he had leading up to it. So I'm not attempting to jump into his brain, but I do think that that's probably colored it. He feels like, I can guess that he feels like he paid his dues, and he did
pay more than enough dues
to become a head coach.
You did attempt to jump into his brain. It's okay. It was a nice ride while we were there with you. You did.
Yeah, my bad. Did I apologize for that? I take back all apologies. Apologies are off for black people until further notice.
Whoa! No.
Apologies are done. We're done.
No.
Apologizing.
No, you
I'll
can't
you know
decree it.
When it's back on. We're done. Decreed.
You don't get to be the king on this. You're not the guy who gives permission on immunity on apologies.
He does today, and he does
you?
For this week
oh,
at least.
Oh, man. Oh, Massa Dan down in Plantation, Florida, trying to take all the power back. Oh, here we go, Daddy boy. Jeez. We're back to this.
Dominic Foxworth with us here on ESPN Radio.
Let Roy speak.
I will let Roy speak in the next segment. Quit bossing people around here.
No, don't make Roy speak. You can't make Roy speak. Don't make him speak. Don't think that he wants to speak, Dan. Stop thinking you can order us around. Apologies are off. For all people of a certain pigmentation, we're off. Brown bag testing it for apologies.
All right, so then I guess what I need to do is, Dominique,
apologize.
I'm sorry to you. Roy, I'm sorry to you. Would you like to speak, Roy, or would you like to speak next segment? What would you like, Roy?
I'll speak next segment.
Okay, I'm sorry that I didn't let you speak this segment. Stugatz, do you have a question for Dominique? Please be careful, because he's power hungry and he's drunk. He's drunk with this new freedom that he has.
Why'd you do that?
Are you warning people about me? You think I'm dangerous? You're warning people about the black man? Just because of the color of my skin, is it scary to you? Dan? Fair-skinned Danny? Huh?
All right, no need to be so angry. No need to be so angry.
Here we go. There's no need to be angry. 400 years, Dan. 400 years. I've been nice. We've been nice for 400 years, Dan. Today, if I want to yell a little bit, I think it is justified. Back to my man, Stu. You got a question for me, brother?
No. Would you like to come back next segment? Because we don't have to respect any.
Here we go.
Hold on.
You're pushing me off
of
commercials
again.
No, wait a minute.
It's the money in the clock right now. It's not the man. It's the money in the clock.
But you're commercial.
You're taking Roy's time away.
Oh, yeah. I took Roy's time
away. Roy's time. And,
oh my God.
Ask a Dominique to do more free work. I mean,
this inequality stinks. It stinks.
I'm tired of it. His 5 days of equality has been too much. We're going to come back.
Oh, you
Dominic
think this is equality,
Foxworth.
Dan? You think this is equality?
Dominic Foxworth will continue with us here in just a minute on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We love sports. Sports inspire us. They give us hope in ourselves, in the world, and, of course, in amazing comebacks. Our love for sports grows each day. Dear Sports is our love letter to sports. Share your Dear Sports letter with us. Call 860-506-6161 or share a video or text using the hashtag Dear Sports on Twitter or Instagram.
One of the many reasons that I love Dominic Foxworth is because he's pretty fearless, and football does not, you know, playing football is not at the height of what I consider that fearlessness. The bravest thing he's ever done was get banned from SportsCenter for talking about a sex toy. But the second bravest thing that he has done is that recently, Stugatz, I haven't heard another voice at the network. Maybe you have, Dominic. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't been consuming everything. Who has been more like, no, this is not enough. We need to do better. Like these statements, some of the ways we're covering this, no, not quite enough. We need to do better. And it's one of the reasons he can be that fearless, Stugatz, is because he doesn't actually need the job. Like this isn't, right. Yep. this is a play thing. So the platform's valuable to him, but he can really push the boundaries on this. Have you heard a lot of other people at the network, Dominic, continually seeing these sports statements and being like, nope, not quite enough? Nick Saban's statement, nope, not quite enough.
I don't know. I honestly not keeping a lot of track. I can talk about the history of this stuff, and obviously it hasn't existed at this network or any network. And some people who were aggressive about being outspoken are no longer at this network. So I don't know. While I have an opportunity and I've had the good fortune to make enough money to be financially stable, so I'm not going to ask of these team owners to be aggressive because of their security, or the coaches or white athletes to be aggressive because of their security, if I'm not willing to do it myself. And I mean, to be clear, Dan, I didn't get banned from SportsCenter. Like, there was no official ban. I just, they just stopped calling me, and that was that. I was going to SportsCenter once a week, and then it was going really well. I had people laughing and learning, and they're like, this is great. Let's do it twice a week. And then I started doing it twice a week, and then I went that next step, and they stopped calling me, which is fine. Like, I understand their position. I was testing the lines. I know the line now, SportsCenter. You can have me back. I'll be all right. I'll act right. I might call out some racists, but that's what you want, right?
And it makes you feel better. I mean, they stopped using me and Dan, too.
Oh, man. Kid, I mean, I enjoy coming on this show because we get a chance to laugh and have fun. So, like, I imagine it's funny. The people who watch your show and don't watch Get Up probably like me, and the people who watch Get Up and don't watch your show probably hate me because I'm on that show yelling, but at the same time, I'm laughing my ass off during commercial breaks. Like, it's so funny because we are watching a video of Vic Fangio, and I just sometimes there are these moments that just snap me out of it and just make me laugh. And if you would have told me in early March that I would be watching a head coach of the Denver Broncos on a artificial green screen talking about how racism doesn't exist while his shoulder appears and disappears, like, I would have said you are ridiculous. And so I saw that this morning just before I was about to go on some rant about white guilt. I'm laughing, and they're about to come to me, and I'm laughing to myself, like, look at this fool. And it's just been fun.
Well, hold on a second, though. So you're telling me that on Get Up, like, your racial views are hardly extreme. Like, it's not like in any of the time that we've been spending with you, you're peppering us with what can be viewed as extreme or militant. You're viewed as militant on Get Up?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not some sort of revolutionary, but I do. My views, I think, are not too different from most Black people, I would suggest, and probably many Black people at the network. However, we rarely get the opportunity to talk about these things. And right now we're in this unique situation where there are no sports. White people keep saying dumb things and Black people are dying. So we keep getting the chance to talk about it. So, like, I love sports. I enjoy, I wouldn't say love sports, but I really like sports. I enjoy talking about sports, but it often feels inconsequential throughout the year. Like, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, man, I'm so fortunate to have this awesome job where I get paid to write and talk about and watch sports. And then sometimes I wake up and I'm like, what am I really doing? Like, I have some security and some reach. Am I really doing something that when I'm on my deathbed, I'll be proud of? And then something like this comes up and I'm not going to squander this opportunity. And I think I've been conscious about staying close to the line, but not crossing the line, because I certainly don't want to get fired. But I, what's worse than getting fired is me looking back at this moment and opportunity and say that I bit my tongue because I was scared or because I wanted the money. And that so much of that stuff happens, I think, even on smaller issues where people won't be critical of particular front offices or particular players because they're trying to protect their relationships. Like, I'm going to do this job the way that I know how to do it. And I do think that if I ever want to go work in sports again after this, it's going to be hard. Not too many teams are going to want to bring your boy in, or too many leagues or unions necessarily going to bring your boy in. But it's a price. We all have to pay a price to be able to look in the mirror. And price I pay. Dan, you got anything
Jesus,
to say?
Jesus, the martyrdom, God Almighty, the principled martyrdom. You're wasting.
I don't have a martyr anymore. Do we have to go back this anymore?
You're wasting your Harvard education talking about Vic Fangio.
It's not me to have the martyr. I don't owe y'all nothing. I don't got to do nothing else. It's on you, Dan, Stu, all
Hard
of
Network what? Out. Back. Hard Network out.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy online at progressive.com. Mina Kimes is going to join us in just a minute here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Live. Here's your SportsCenter update. Sacramento Kings play-by-play announcer Grant Napier has resigned after tweeting in all caps, "All Lives Matter" on Sunday, in response to a question about Black Lives Matter posed by DeMarcus Cousins, whom he said created a dark cloud over the Kings franchise three seasons ago. Less than 24 hours after sending an email to employees stating that the Madison Square Garden company is not more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters, Knicks owner James Dolan emphasized in a follow-up memo to staff that the company condemns racism against anyone. And finally, the Devil's Backbone Brewing Company is offering a position as chief hiking officer. They would pay someone $20,000 to spend 5 to 7 months hiking the Appalachian Trail, the length of 2,200 miles, while drinking beer. America's number one shaving cream? That's Barbasol shaving cream. Choose Barbasol thick and rich shaving cream, the American original for over 100 years. Close Shave America, Close Shave Barbasol. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
She's got two podcasts you should check out. If you're a football dork, you can get informed with the Mina Kimes Show with Lenny. If you're somebody who just wants the bite-sized nuggets of the day, ESPN's Daily is a podcast where she gets her journalism on. Mina Kimes is with us now on ESPN Radio. You just heard the update with James Dolan. Do you think, Mina, and thank you for joining us, do you think that corporations should be saying anything at all, even if what they're going to say is going to be totally empty and toothless?
Well, I reject that premise of the question, right? Because a lot of people responded to the Dolan initial comment saying he wasn't qualified to say anything, saying, yeah, see, if you can't say anything, don't say anything at all. That's not an acceptable option. I agree with everything you've been saying about these statements over the last few days, how toothless and lame they are, right? I mean, they have made the phrase systemic racism completely meaningless by refusing to actually explain what that means. Who is doing the racism, right? I mean, so few of them are actually using the words police violence or police brutality. But I still think the fact that all of these companies, these teams, feel compelled to say anything, even the banal statements, which I think are useless on their face, the sheer volume of them matters. It matters internally. You saw Pablo's report, as I begrudgingly give him credit for his reporting. It matters to the Knicks employees because it is a litmus test, I think, for where these owners stand. Again, the fact that they're saying anything at all. But it matters because it says something about priorities. You know, a big part of the reason why NFL teams didn't give Colin Kaepernick a chance, there were ideological reasons for a lot of the owners. They actually disagreed with him, the things he was saying, the things he did. But they were also economically fearful, and I think incorrectly so. They were afraid there would be backlash, that it would hit their wallets. Now consider this. These teams are economically fearful for the opposite reason right now. They are afraid to say nothing or to say the wrong thing. And I think that speaks to the fact that this has all been so normalized. It's moved so much. I mean, Nike, they backed Kaepernick in part because they believe their customers supported him. And I think these team statements reflect that these companies and teams see that there's a shifting priority, right? That their own customers, that their fans, not just their employees, and that matters too, that they want them to do this. And I think that's really important that the norm is moving in America right now.
Mina, I understand the employees wanting their team, their organization to do it, so they're not the ones who are part of an organization that doesn't do it. Yeah. But do we care? The fact that it's insincere, an insincere statement from James Dolan is going to matter that much to that many people, because it would be insincere, I believe, if it came from James Dolan. And why are we looking to James Dolan for leadership at a time like this?
I think my point is we're not looking to him for leadership. Like, no one's going to read a statement and learn something for the most part. I mean, there's a few statements out there. I thought what the Tampa Bay Rays said, you can go look that up, was really well done. The Wizards, Dan, I mentioned yesterday on the show, the fact that they let their players speak for them. I don't know why more teams aren't doing that, by the way. That would have been so easy for Dolan to do. Oh, I'm not qualified. I don't want to say anything. But you know what? I'm going to show my players that I view them as partners, and I'm going to show fans that I care. And I'm just going to let them speak. It's so easy, and I don't know why more teams aren't doing that. But my point is this. You're not looking to a statement as a text, right? It's not a book. It's not an article. It's not something you're not going to learn some broader lesson, I think, about what's happening right now from a statement. But I do think it's not only like it is a signal to your employees. I do think the fact that they're putting them out, again, it's not about the actual, like, it's not about us learning from the statement. It's about what the fact that these companies, these corporations, these economically motivated entities feel compelled to do this, what that says to me. I mean, shoot, there's a reason why white quarterbacks are posting Black Lives Matter. Freaking fast food companies are getting in on it. Nobody said, none of these people said anything in 2012 when Trayvon Martin was killed, 2014, Mike Brown, 2016 when Colin Kaepernick knelt. Now, they feel compelled to show support. Something is shifting, and I do think this corporate response is indicative of that, even if the response itself isn't a lesson.
You came up as a business reporter. We are delighted to know things like you never even knew that Tony Kornheiser was someone who was on Monday Night Football. but when you see Ben and Jerry's make their corporate statement, where I feel like if there's anything America can agree on, it's that ice cream is delicious. Like none of us, like we're no unified anywhere the way we are there. Like all people like Ben and Jerry's. When you see their statement be that kind of strong, why can't these other statements have the phrase police brutality in it with, while saying it's not that we're against the police, we're just against the brutality? Yeah.
Because the team of PR people who are writing them, I guess, for these other companies, and are being held accountable by their owners are responding to their owners' fears, their beliefs. I know I said they're economically fearful, but I think there's different grades of that, right? There's different perceptions of how their fans or their viewers or their listeners or their consumers will receive things. I think there are still companies that do believe, okay, well, we can't say this much. We have to say something, right? Because like I said, the center has moved on this. But if we say these words, that might not fly. I think they're wrong. And again, this is moving. Like, I cannot stress enough. 4 years ago, this would not have happened. These companies wouldn't say anything, Dan. And I'm not saying it's meaningful. I'm not saying it's useful. I'm not plotting them. I am not pitying them. There's a thing going on right now where companies and teams and white people are saying, well, I'm so conflicted. What if I say anything? I'll be accused of not doing enough. I'm going to be tone police. World's tiniest violin. If you're concerned right now is whether or not you're going to get a mean internet comment or you feel pressured to say something. But I do believe the fact that all of them, that everyone is saying something, it does matter. It doesn't matter functionally. It matters in a larger sense.
Can the NFL ever escape the stain of how they treated Kaepernick?
I don't think so. I don't think while this generation is in place. I've been thinking about that because I've been thinking if the players chose to peacefully protest the same way this season, what would happen? Coach Sean McVay, the Rams, said yesterday he would support his players no matter what they did. And he wasn't talking about kneeling or anything, but you know, that sort of opened that door. And I've been wondering, Dan, like what would happen if Kaepernick, if he did his protests now? I don't think it would be received the same way. Or ill-received, rather. I think because of that sort of the economic pressure I described earlier, the fact that there is this understanding of shifting norms, I don't think they would respond in the same way with that fear of business backlash. But to your question about whether or not they can escape what happened, what they did, it's going to follow them. I mean, you saw the Niners put out yesterday, they did the Black Square, I believe, and, you know, hosted Black Lives Matter. And they were roasted by a lot of people. And that's unfair because, Frank, every team passed on him, you know? So it's something that's going, and this is something I thought at the time when this was happening. I thought, man, this is never going to be washed away. The decision's made right now. And I think that's true.
Mina, thank you for being on with us. Again, check out her podcast, the Mina Kimes podcast with Lenny. It's about football. ESPN's Daily is about whatever thing it is that you want extra reported every day for ESPN. Thank you for being on with us, Mina.
Thanks for having me.
Advance Auto Parts, Stugatz, we will get to Roy. I am so tired of bumping Roy here. We have bumped Roy out of the way. There has been a certain systemic racism in the show for an hour and 15 minutes today. So we will get to Roy because I just got a nice compliment from someone that I think Roy will appreciate.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your SportsCenter update. Sacramento Kings play-by-play announcer Grant Napier has resigned after tweeting in all caps, "All Lives Matter" on Sunday in response to a question about Black Lives Matter posed by DeMarcus Cousins, whom he said created a dark cloud over the Kings franchise 3 seasons ago. Less than 24 hours after sending an email to employees stating that the Madison Square Garden Company is not more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters, Knicks owner James Dolan emphasized in a follow-up memo to staff that the company condemns racism against anyone. And finally, in 2007, set designers for The Big Bang Theory toured the apartments of graduate students and recreated them to portray how young scientists were living. After CBS tested the show, the sets were scrapped because they were too depressing. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So we will get to Bomani Jones in a second here. Bristol, tell me when he is there. I wanted to get into the Ben & Jerry's statement because it was stronger than any of the other company statements. But Bomani Jones is there now. As I've told you before, if you want to be enlightened, if you want to learn, if you want to listen, the right time with Bomani Jones is a place where you will hear what I believe to be the guy who is the best on the subject of race that we've ever had in the history of our network. So if you want to check that out, the right time with Bomani Jones will inform you. Let's talk about some of the sports stuff, Bomani. First, let's start with that King story that Stugatz was just reading. What do you make of that, the fact that the Kings just fired an announcer? I don't know if he's beloved or not. I don't know how long he's been there for tweeting at DeMarcus Cousins, all lives matter.
Yo, the best part about this is, A, DeMarcus Cousins is the walking embodiment of he's smarter than you think he is. Right. Like, I think that people make a lot of assumptions, like the thing that Clay Travis did that one time about how Cousins was going to be in jail by some point. Like, Cousins isn't that guy. Right. Like, I see why people think he fits that template, but he's not that guy. And he just knew. He was like, I'm going to ask this guy if he thinks Black Lives Matter and watch what he does. And this dude was like, I don't want my job no more. Watch this. I don't even know if that is generally a fireable offense. It sounds like it was just one thing too many, because I ain't seen a whole lot of people weeping about him being gone, including his coworkers.
I wanted to get to the Dabo Swinney stuff because I thought you were really smart at sort of explaining how it is that Dabo Swinney arrived at his worldview. So let's start with that part of it as opposed to what's happened in the news the last couple of days with his assistant coach. Can you explain to the audience why, when Dabo says like that he doesn't really see the idea of privilege, what it is that you're seeing there when you look at Dabo?
Okay, so Swinney, and this hit me, I think, what it was 2016 or whatever year it was, he said things about Kaepernick that he had to say. And he's looking around, and you got to think of one thing to remember about him also is that he's born in 1969, and I think Pelham, Alabama is where he's from, or whatever it is. So he's a dude that's growing up post-segregation, except it's incredibly intense segregation because all the white folks just packed up their stuff and moved out of the city, right? Like, that's the world that he has grown up in. So cats like that, especially in the South, they make a lot of their comparisons, not about what is, but compared to what used to be, except what used to be was so awful. So he's up there, he's like, look, I look on TV, I see black quarterbacks. Like, well, just because we got a couple, that's all it takes, right? Well, yeah, I see black quarterbacks. Like, this is what it is. So this man who had to listen to whatever everybody had to say about Deshaun Watson coming out, he looks at it and he's just like, yeah, we got black quarterbacks, everything's okay. But Dabo grew up, like, legitimately poor. This dude went to college and was sharing a bedroom with his mother, right? Like, that's the kind of poverty that he grew up with. So he sees himself, in all likelihood, as a wide receiver who wasn't very fast, who came in as a walk-on, worked his way up to getting playing time on a national championship team, right? Like, he grinded that out, and then he was out of the game. He didn't know what to do. He was working in real estate, and somebody's like, hey, why don't you start coaching? And so he goes into coaching and works his butt off to become a head coach and creates one of the most unlikely college football powers that we have ever seen. So that dude looks at himself, and he's like, I haven't had any advantages. Nobody's done anything for me. Look how hard I worked in this country to get what I want. And he can't possibly look at a black person and see that as somebody who's had to overcome any more than all the things that he's overcome. But where he messes it up is, once he got out of that poverty, once he got into those jobs, he got to just be a white dude. And that's the part that he doesn't get about black people. Like, I, who did not grow up poor, I grew up with two parents who are PhDs. I've had great fortunes of exposure and all this other stuff. And Dan, you watch people underestimate me every day, and I'm me.
Well, Monty, most people won't see it that way because they don't know what you just explained about Dabo Swinney and how he grew up and how he arrived where he arrived. Should they?
Well, it's no defense for him, but I do think that there's a humanity to where he comes from. It's too easy to just write him off as being some sort of evil dude because, in a way, in football terms, he's like, in terms of application and race in football, this is a dude that stays with white dudes, like playing receiver and playing linebacker, like playing the black people positions, but almost always has a black quarterback. Like, in my recollection, the one white quarterback that Dabo brought in, you had to be Trevor Dan Lawrence. to be that guy. You see what I'm saying? Like, he's the dude. You can go look at him and be like, yo, Dabo, I look at your views on race, and I got some questions. He's going to point to his coaching staff. He's going to look at these black dudes on my coaching staff. He's going to say, look at these black dudes that I got playing quarterback. All those things that kind of sort of make sense. So, like, if you're looking to just dismiss him completely as a fraud, I don't think he's a fraud. I actually think that he has a very consistent ideology that he holds to on all of these topics. He just can't understand his limitations to his perspective because his perspective is so colored by whiteness and the exposures that whiteness has given him and the blinders that whiteness has put around him, that a guy like that, he's not going to know what to say about all of these things. He's just not equipped.
Bomani Jones with us on ESPN Radio. Check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones if you want to learn something. How about the controversy at Clemson, where the assistant coach is now admitting after some players called him out that he did use the N-word, but is saying that he only used it repeating it as if that's going to help him out. I guess that's the way you got to go if everyone knows that you did that. What do you make of that story, and what's Dabo's responsibility there?
Well, I do think that the way that he put it is an important clarification, right? So I don't know if you guys remember Bill Stewart, the dude that used to coach at West Virginia. He's passed away now, but Stewart used to coach at Virginia Military Institute, and he got fired because he told a student, a player, I'm trying to remember exactly how it came up, but basically, don't act like an N-word is what he said. Like, don't give him an excuse to call you one. Don't act like one. And Virginia Military Institute was like, oh, I don't know about this one. Now, was Stewart calling the dude an N-word? No. And that's the thing, this Pierman dude is, he's like, I wasn't calling him that. I was repeating it. And I do think
all right, hold on a second, Bo. Bo, hold on a second. Hold on a second, Bomani. Somebody turn down Bomani in Bristol. Turn him down. Thank you. We will come back to Bomani in a second. I'm pretty sure, what do you think there, Stugatz? Did Bomani just walk into his bathroom? Is that what just happened there? Did it sound like that's what just happened there?
100%. Walked into a bathroom, yes.
He was moving, right? He was definitely moving in the middle of his point. There's no way he was stationary and then the connection became that, right?
I imagine Bomani to always be moving, and I've seen Bomani in action. He likes to walk while he talks. I actually like to do it as well. I hate the fact that we sit around doing these radio shows. I'd rather be walking around with a microphone like I'm on stage, but he absolutely was walking, and he walked into a big bathroom.
I was on headphones, and the headphones cut out. And I was like, where's this voice coming from? I felt like somebody was talking to me, and it was a speakerphone.
You're alleging that you did not walk into a bathroom and that you're not walking around.
No, I started in the bathroom, and now I am walking around.
All right.
Like all of those things are happening.
All right. Well, you do us a favor and go back into the bathroom because you sounded a lot better. We'll come back with you. I want to hear the rest of what it is that you have to say, but can we do it from a place where that's not going to happen because we missed the middle of your point?
Okay. I mean, are we going to commercial or you need me to do it now?
We're gonna go to commercial. DraftKings, people. Tell the people, Stugatz, about DraftKings. The sports action is coming. What's the matter, Stugatz? You think we should keep going with Bomani?
No. I was just laughing. It's just funny. I mean, just the way we're doing the show where you're like, I'm like, nah, you can do it now. And you're like, nah, we'll come back. And it just sounds, we sound like idiots. All right. Bomani Jones, nice enough to stick around and spend a second segment with us. He joins us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line.
The right time with Bomani Jones is the name of the podcast. Anyway, we were saying before we were cut off, you were talking about what his responsibility, Dabo Swinney's responsibility is, and in general, what happens when an assistant coach, and has the context of I was repeating the N-word, I wasn't, you know, doing something worse than that. You think that's relevant context?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I think there is a difference between going in the huddle and being, what are you N-words doing, versus him trying to make this point that he was trying to make. And again, I just want to know how that man don't work with young black men, presumably this long, and did not know. These are the rules, Jack. They get to say it to each other. We don't get to say it to them in any context. And he might be asking himself, well, why can't I say it? Because you can't. That's why. How do you not know that, right? Now, for Swinney, where he loses it is, and this is the point that the Tuttle kid made when he first brought this up, and this is what I thought was more relevant than anything else. you didn't make that man apologize to the team. Like, your whole team found out this happened. This is a thing that affects them. Dabo seemed to believe that the way he could handle it is just to keep it low, go talk to the guys over there, and then everything is going to be okay. And to me, that was irresponsible of him, and it seemed to show a grave misunderstanding about the ways that people are affected by hearing that word. So, like, I can respond in the way that I respond to it, fine. But those kids that you got there, they don't see it the same way, and it seems pretty clear that a few of them were affected by this. And so, to me, where Dabo loses me, and I've made this example a few other times in other contexts, but never forget this. Deion Kane failed a drug test. And Deion Kane, this is his freshman year, but Deion Kane was good. He failed a drug test right before the national championship game. And Swinney sent him home. He was really only required to sit for one game based on that drug test. Swinney sent him home and didn't bring him back for the national championship game, presumably because of accountability, presumably to prove a point. What I need to know here is why it is when this dude makes this gigantic mistake at work, forgiveness seems to be at play. But if a dude fails a drug test, now you got to prove a point. So what you're telling me is that some dude smoking weed is more important than this dude making an indefensible error and hurting the feelings of your players. How's that work?
Well, Monty Jones with us on ESPN Radio, as I've told you, he is better on these subjects. He's smarter in general than most people, but he's better on this subject than anyone I've heard in sports media. The right time with Bomani Jones is where you go. The Tiger Woods statement, Mike Ryan just told me during the break, Stugatz, this is unbelievable. The guys who have said nothing in terms, when there are no sports, we are cranking up the mythology machine. Mm-hmm. It's 10 episodes of Michael Jordan who said nothing. It's 10 episodes coming next year on Tom Brady who said nothing. It's the MLB network giving you 64 straight hours of Derek Jeter who said nothing, and now HBO is making its way into the mix with Tiger Woods, the guy who continues to say nothing with his most recent statement, Bomani.
2020 is the year that Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, and O.J. Simpson all made statements on a matter of race. And by the way, the two most strident on this were O.J. Simpson and Michael Jordan out of those three. And I feel like if you Tiger Woods and you look around and you see doing more gangster than you, like, at some point, somebody at your camp has to look at this statement. But see, this is the problem with Tiger Woods. And I could be wrong here, right? But Tiger Woods strike me as a dude who has no black people around him except for those that are some variety of kin to him. He did used to hang out with some black dudes. Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, those types, and apparently him don't hang out with them no more, right? Like he's blaming the black people for everything that happened to him. You know, he treated Jordan and Barkley like dudes treat their dreadlocks when they get arrested. Like, oh yeah, it was the dreadlocks' fault. Cut those off before trial, right? And so now you out here, and Mike is like, I can't take it no more. And Tiger Woods is like, yeah, but so are my friends are cops.
Well, that's golf, isn't it? Like, I think you brought up a relevant point where he's just surrounded by golf all the time. He doesn't view himself as anything other than golf.
He could be an accountant, and he would still be hanging out with nothing but white people. His upbringing, and I haven't read the books on this, so I need to be careful, but from my understanding of it, the read I've always had on Tiger Woods is that he has lived a life where he has been ostracized in large part because of blackness, and yet part of that comes from golf. And he seems to have believed, and I've talked to people who went to Stewart at Stanford at the same time as him, and they said the same thing. He seemed to have believed that if he could separate himself from blackness, he could separate himself from all the terrible things that have happened to him because of the way that people treated him because he was black. And good gracious, that is stupid. Stupid, 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 stupid. But he seemed to have believed it and has written it out this far.
Bo, I'm interested, we had you on a couple of days ago, if you still feel the same way, and you were interested to see if you were going to still feel the same way. So here we are a couple of days later, where on Monday you felt some sort of shift, you felt some hope, you felt people paying attention. Do you still feel the same way today, if not more so?
I do still feel that that's the way that this is going to go, but it's not entirely for the most optimistic of reasons. Look, man, you see what's going on out here in these streets and the things they're doing. Man, they got places out here in New York that they're barricading up in the middle of the afternoon, like in the middle of the morning, that the police stations barricading up and everything else. So the law enforcement community, with the encouragement of the president of the United States, is taking quite an aggressive posture, right? It's worth noting that two cities that had no violence early, I don't know how it's going now, but had no violence early when every place else was burning, with two places that nobody would expect.
Newark, New Jersey, and Camden, New Jersey, right? Like, these are the places that people in New Jersey are definitely afraid of going to, right? I ain't so excited about them either. But in Newark, what they found was that people trusted the mayor and that the cops were not in, like, full gear. They weren't in all the riot gear looking like it was going to be a fight. And as a result, nobody got a fight. When people tried to get a little ruckus going, the people on the streets were the ones that stopped them because there was not an antagonistic presence coming from the police. The police are maintaining an antagonistic presence. The people are still going to go out on the street. And this seems to be shaping itself up to where we're going to see something. We're going to see something horrible on television, and that something on television that is horrible is probably going to be something that galvanizes people. That's my read on how this is going to go right now, and I dare somebody to tell me why I'm wrong.
We're out of time, unfortunately, but it is crazy to me, Bomani, that the thing that inspires hope is basically that, hey, the call for equality has resulted in, well, the police are going to be brutal to everybody. That's how we're going to be equal. And that's how we're going to get the attention of everybody else to have them walk with black people, because the equality is going to be, we're going to beat up everybody. We're going to treat everybody like black people right now.
The great Anderson .Paak, please don't come around these parts and tell us that we all a bunch of animals, because the only time to turn the cameras on is when we bleep and bleep up. Cameras on.
Thank you, Bo. The right time with Bomani Jones, as I told you, he's got a very strong knowledge of history, music, and nowhere is he stronger than race. Sports, maybe? Next.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your SportsCenter update. As the NBA models a 22-team format for the season's proposed resumption beginning July 31st in Orlando, Florida, a timeline shared with teams as a last possible date for a Finals Game 7 lands on October 12th. Tom Ricketts was asked if teams worth billions collectively should simply take out loans or find other ways to pay the cost of playing in 2020, even if it's without fans. Ricketts said the scale of losses across the league is biblical. And finally, Joe and Sue Geschel heard knocking at their front door and looked outside to find a pair of unwelcome visitors, two alligators fighting on their stoop. The alligators were instinctively fighting for territory. Sue said the reptiles left on their own after about 20 minutes. She left those things out there for 20 minutes? Crazy? These days, it's good to be prepared, and that includes your vehicle. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing and installation with no appointment necessary, and also curbside pickup on any order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See stores for details. For all the latest headlines and information, tune to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
As opposed to what? Do you think she should have gone out there and broken up the fight between the alligators?
You got to call the crocodile hunter, man, the alligator hunter, and get it. That's an emergency when you got two right outside your door. You don't leave them there for 20 minutes. That's crazy.
I think Mike's got a correction here. Did he just kill somebody, or did he just?
It worked in reverse. He brought somebody back to life who's been dead for a while. Crocodile hunter tragically passed away as a result of stingray.
No.
What do you mean no? He tragically passed away. What do you mean no?
No, I know he tragically passed away, but there are other crocodile hunters, especially in South Florida.
You think that's an occupation? Okay, you think that's an occupation. You didn't just... Are you backtracking and pivoting with all your lies?
I am telling you that I think it's an occupation.
Like accountant.
I tend to believe that you think it is an occupation like accountant. So yes.
Like you could go to school and study it? You think you can go to college to become a crocodile hunter?
I think there is a couple of specific companies you can call in South Florida, especially, where if two crocs are fighting at your door, or one just shows up at your door, you call the company and they come and they get the croc. Yes.
Okay.
You think there are business cards that say Crockett?
I think you're the Croc.
I do.
At Lebatard Show on Twitter is how you vote on the polls.
It's animal control. They don't call themselves Croc Hunters. I don't understand.
Croc Hunter is not a profession.
Google search. Hold on.
Okay.
Well, it was in one very famous instance, but since then, no one's really taken up the mantle.
It is a difficult legacy to follow. I want to get into something Stugat said during the break that was really funny. But before we do that, can I just point out to everybody the uproarious symbolic fun in the idea of, at a time with no sports, when the gates have been opened and trampled any executives who are shouting, talk more sports, when this is happening in America and you have to hide under your desk if what it is you want is more sports, that the place that we go on the mythologizing when there are no sports, at a time, Stugat, when the voice of the athlete or the voice of the power is about as important as at any time across our generations that we've seen in this country over the last 50 years, that the guys that were doing the mythologizing about, all of them, Michael Jordan, 10 episodes, Tom Brady, 10 episodes, Tiger Woods, HBO was getting involved with Tiger Woods in a massive documentary, and Major League Baseball's channel doing 20 or 64 straight hours of Jeter coverage at a time when the athlete is screaming to be heard. We're still out here saying, can we just stick to the guys who say nothing? Can we please just continue to focus on the excellence of the sport and let's bury everybody in content? These documentaries could have been done at any time in the last 10 years. We're doing them now, all of them. Please let's get back to sports so we could go back to talking about the meaningless stuff instead of the stuff that are that makes America burn.
All right, but let's remember just a week ago, everything was about the coronavirus and a pandemic and there were no sports. And so and Tiger Woods does have an actual story to tell. Whether it's interesting or not to some people right now doesn't matter. He does have an interesting, inspiring story. And these things take planning. So I'm certain that they were planning on airing this. I understand your overall point, but it is Tiger Woods and he's a story to tell. And last week, we would have been so excited about this 10-part docuseries.
And I don't think it's, even though Dan makes a good point, I don't think it's these executives actively seeking the people that say nothing. We just had a very recent example of Michael Jordan being a huge rating success. So they're just trying to replicate the formula with uber famous sports people that can bring in the monster ratings. At least I would think, or maybe there's a more sinister.
Oh no, I don't actually think it's a conspiracy. I just think it's a mindset in sports that has enveloped my entire journalism career. And it's given me a path to be the guy who urinates on all the mythologies. Like there was somehow a lane here, Stugat. Like, wait a minute. I can go between Jeter and Brady and Woods and Michael Jordan and slalom in that they're not doing anything like Ali would have done with this platform.
I mean, we're really not going to stretch Freddie Mitchell out, though, to 10 episodes.
But Terrell Owens might work.
Maybe.
Terrell Owens might work a little bit. But, Stugatz, during the break, you said something funny after Bomani Jones was on with us. You just blurted. I don't know who you were talking to, whether you muttered it into your feet or what. But you just said, I wish I could be as smart as Bomani Jones for one day. And it got us all to wondering what you would do with that power if you had it. Like,
I don't know. I mean, but I would love to feel what it's like to be that smart for a single day. And then Chris got involved because he's not smart. And so then we started having a conversation. Chris was saying, you know, I'd like to have it for an entire weekend. And I'm saying, nah, that's a waste of a weekend. I'd rather have it on a Monday or Tuesday so I could be smarter than Dan. But we are both perplexed about the idea of actually being smart and what goes into
well,
it.
Well, what's great is you wanted to take a shortcut there. Mike was laughing because you actually asked the question, hey, how can I be smart? Can I do it on a podcast?
Yeah. And he wants it as a podcast, not as a service to others. He just wants to get all the downloads for the podcast, but he wants the podcast to actually do all the necessary schooling. When we all know here what's going to happen is you're going to look up from your phone at the end and say, I didn't catch any of that.
Well, Chris and I were debating, how do you become that smart? Are you born that smart? Reading.
No, you work and study and your family
comes. No. Bomani did it by listening to podcasts, clearly.
Well, listen, Bomani's going to be our first guest because we are launching a podcast called How Do You Become Smart, where smart people come on and teach us and we don't retain anything. I mean, how about that?
Stugatz, I think that is absolutely what stupidity should become for like 10 episodes, just like the Michael Jordan documentary. For 10 episodes, go ahead and here is stupidity.
TED Talks. He becomes a TED
yes,
Talk.
Yes. It becomes Stugatz learns how to be or doesn't learn how to be smart. A 10-part series. Because how else would you go about getting smart? Like, what other ideas do you have for stupidity, getting smart where other people do the work and you don't even listen? You just go to the bathroom and eat a hoagie.
I haven't thought of anything. I mean, if there's anything smart on that podcast, it's because Stanzik thought of it. I mean, I just love the idea of Chris and I sitting there, and Chris, you have to be my co-host on this thing, talking to smart people for an hour, and then at the end of the hour being like, hey, what'd they just say?
I love the idea of you trying to crowdsource how you get smart, because you just throw it out there. How do I get smart? Somewhat, Chris, your ally. I don't know. Let's make a podcast. Yes, build it.
Chris, what are your contributions here to making stupidity smarter? Put it on the poll as well, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Does stupidity need to be smarter in these troubled
times? I want stupidity to stay right where it is. I want it to be dumb and stupid. This is a whole separate new podcast called How Do You Become Smart with Stugatz and Chris Cody.
People will listen to these 10 episodes, and they will be smart afterwards. It's a shortcut to getting smart, and I think it's a brilliant idea. And like I said, Bomani's got to be the first guest, because how does he do that? Is it the reading? Like, Dan, if there's the pie chart of why Bomani is smart, was he born that way? Did he just read a lot? Is his retention really good? Like, how do smart people become smart?
Something's up with this whole reading thing. There's something to it, but the thing is, it takes time. And I'd rather just interview Bomani and him tell me what he read, because he'll take the most interesting parts. But reading is something we should all collectively look into, I believe.
He was in college, I think, at 15 or 16. He comes from academia, and I've never met a brain like that. Like, I just, not sports, just period. Like, he'd be on these important shows, Stugatz, like, doing, you know, some MSNBC thing where he's talking politics and dangerous subject matter. And during it, he's playing word games on his phone. Like, he's playing, like, while he's on the show, discuss. I don't know how the hell he does that.
Do you think he could show me and Chris the way? I mean,
in like 24 minutes, because they don't have that much time.
You need it to be 24 minutes.
All right, 24 minutes.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Can Bomani make Chris and Stugatz smart in 24 minutes?
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The latest 30 for 30, Be Water, directed by Bao Nguyen, is a gripping, fascinating, intimate look at not just those final defining years of Lee's life, but the complex, often difficult, and seismic journey that led to Bruce Lee's ultimate emergence as a singular icon in the histories of film, martial arts, and even the connection between the Eastern and Western worlds. Be Water premieres this Sunday, June 7th at 9 Eastern on ESPN. I'm excited to watch that. The film will be available to stream on ESPN Plus immediately following its debut. Here's your SportsCenter update. I see you laughing, Dan. As the NBA models a 22-team format for the season's proposed resumption beginning July 31st in Orlando, Florida, a timeline shared with teams as a last possible date for a Finals Game 7 lands on October 12th. Tom Ricketts was asked if teams worth billions collectively should simply take out loans or find other ways to pay the cost of playing in 2020, even if it's without fans. Ricketts said, quote, the scale of losses across the league is biblical. And finally, Miami Dolphins defensive tackle Devon Godshaw has filed the trademark for Chalks Down, which he will use for the sale of apparel. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
All right. I know many of you are saying to yourselves, even without sports, like, enough. I need a respite from everything that's on my news. Stugatz, I'm not kidding you when I say that I watched 45 minutes of cable news television last night, and it's the first 45 minutes I've seen in like 5 years, and it was exhausting. Yep. Exhausting to watch 45 minutes. I had trouble getting to sleep, and I was super tired just because everybody's screaming and yelling. But if you want some normalcy in your life, both Stugatz and Jim Rome are here to give it to you, because Stugatz is now, after saying, I don't even care who the NBA championship is and who the NBA champion is anymore. Stugatz is now telling baseball to shut up, but even Stugatz is finding solace in Jim Rome. Jim Rome, who once upon a time, by the way, conquered this particular industry so much that he was making more annually than any athlete in American sports. Stugatz loves that Jim Rome is still out here doing it, and doing it the Jim Rome way by doing what?
I love that he threw out a podcast with everything going on. Riots, police brutality, coronavirus, no sports. Will we get back to sports? Has there been a seismic shift here in the United States where white people are starting to listen to black people? That Jim Rome is still throwing out podcasts that are titled Cutting It Up with Jimmy Connors.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. In these troubled times, do you want to listen to Jim Rome cutting it up with Jimmy Connors? Why are you telling baseball to shut up? Because people do want the Stugatz Army wants. The Stugatz Army can't be happy to hear that Stupidity now wants to be Steward Podity, that there's a real rush to get a little bit smarter.
They don't need to worry, Dan. The episode that we released today of Stupidity is perhaps the dumbest episode we've ever released in the short history of the podcast. I mean, it's all about Diana Rossini and her engagement, and we threw her a parade for, you know, an engagement parade where a cavalcade of celebrities came by and left a message for Diana Rossini. It's as dumb as as it could possibly be. So
why are you saying that baseball, who in baseball are you telling to shut up?
Just baseball. Because by the time baseball figures this whole thing out, 50 game season, 120, who gets paid what? How much are we going to get paid? By the time they figure it out and figure out how not to present themselves as being a bunch of selfish, entitled babies, okay? And I'm talking about the players here. Enough already. I'm tired of hearing about them prorated and this and that. I am telling you right now, by the time they figure it out and get a season together, football will be here, college football will be here, the Masters, and we won't care about baseball!
He doesn't know, does he?
Hold on. You better get Malcolm Gladwell on the phone, because I don't know, in terms of advanced economics, what prorated this and that means as a technical term. Like, I don't think that that is the...
it sounded good.
I'm tired of
prorated salaries, 50% of the salary, you know, per game, bonuses.
Basically,
this or that. Scott Boras, pay me a full season for 50 games. But listen, the greed is so ridiculous. You play a sport for a living. Get over yourselves. Players, or is biblical? That's what Rick had said. The losses are going to be biblical. Who cares? By the time baseball figures it out, I don't care how they figure it out or if they figure it out, then I am telling you, all the other sports will be back and no one will care about baseball and its lame 50-game season. Nobody.
The 50-game season, I would think, is something...
It sounds great.
It's awesome. Oh, boy.
boy.
That's right. Just make it totally random. Ladies and gentlemen, the Royals can be good for 50 games. We have no idea who's going to win the title. Let's make the regular season more meaningless than it's ever been in baseball, but God almighty, make it shorter so we can get to random ball when we enjoy the playoffs for just 50 games. Billy, are you finally hopeful? This is the way the Marlins get into the playoffs. This is the way the Marlins get back in the game. Make it a 50-game random season. Hell, Billy wants it a one-game season. Play one game to see if you can get in the playoffs, because the more random, the better it is for the Marlins. You got to be hopeful about a 50-game season, right, Billy? Yeah,
just play baseball already, and they're still going to find a way to mess it up with the Marlins. They always do.
The toilet.
Well, is it just us that hears him like he's in a toilet, or does the audience hear him
like a toilet? What it is, I don't know what it is, but he's the only one that sounds like he's
in a toilet. All right, Billy, help me out here, because I called you during one of the breaks and I'm like, I don't know what to do, because I go to you and it always sounds like a toilet, and you're like, the people are telling me it doesn't sound like a toilet, that it only sounds like a toilet to you guys.
I mean, it sounds fine on every podcast. I'm not an engineer. I don't know what to tell you. Chris says it sounds fine. The listeners say it sounds fine. It's you guys.
Is it just us three? How is it possible that you sound like you're
It's
coming
not
from a
just
submarine?
You three.
Okay.
Yeah, Bubba just said
Bubba the engineer is saying, thank you, Bubba. Bubba, that was a very strong voice that came in here, and now Billy is defeated again. All right.
And I was interested in his answer.
Billy, I want to know what you think about this, but it's hard to understand you. Let's try it again. Let's figure out what's wrong with your microphone and try it again. Okay,
you actually sound better now. Go for it.
He did for a second. I don't know what he did there.
The Marlins are going to mess it up. This isn't worth coming to me 10 times for.
Okay, very good. I think I make those decisions around here, not you. We come back with more sports next.
What?